Hey, business building warrior, welcome to Silent Sales Machine Radio. I'm your host today, Jim Cockrum. I'm going to be bringing on a guest in just a moment, which is a student of ours, as is the case with the vast majority of the episodes of this podcast. It's a student of the Proven Amazon course. She was a coaching student, and she went on to build a beautiful business. She's got a seven-figure business that she runs with her sisters. She's become a leader in our community as well. She's actually one of the presenters that we have scheduled for the Proven Conference, which I'll tell you more about here in just a moment. But I love sharing the stories of the real people who are building real businesses in our community. This podcast has a theme. If you've not listened to more than a few episodes yet, let me fill you in on what the theme is. It's the people who have used the Proven Amazon course to build beautiful businesses. ProvenAmazonCourse.com is the website if you're ready to get started yourself. From my vantage point, this opportunity, as I'm recording this in March of 2024, this Amazon selling opportunity is in its infancy with a very bright future. And I believe we can demonstrate that. And we do demonstrate it frequently, every day, in our free Facebook group. You can go to silentgym.com and join our free Facebook group. You're going to find 2,000 plus success posts from our students. These are people who are getting into the business, building a beautiful business, sharing their stories of what's happening. And then we interview a lot of them on this podcast as well. And just to give you a couple numbers, if you haven't heard me talk about it in a while, Amazon represents about half of all retail online in the United States, just under half. But retail online is still a tiny portion of all retail in the United States. What I mean by that is, if you look at government stats, even 17 to 18% of retail is online. The rest of it is offline, traditional retail stores, but it's not going to stay that way very long. The whole e-commerce thing is in its infancy and it's exploding. And a lot of that growth is happening on Amazon. And we know for a fact that Amazon is struggling on millions of products to keep enough of them on local warehouse shelves to meet the demand of the customers who are shopping. That's the strategy where we start you off as a student in our community, is helping meet the underserved demand in those 150 plus warehouses spread out across the country. Identify those easily sourced products that you can buy at a lower price than you can sell them for on Amazon. You can build a robust business. Thousands of people have done that in our community. And then you can start scaling and stacking on other business models, which is the theme of today's podcast episode. We talked to Amy Stover. She's a great leader in our community. Like I said, most of her business is still retail arbitrage, meaning she's actually going to stores and buying these easily sourced items. You could just as easily be doing these things online, but there's advantages to shopping in stores versus online. I'm not going to dive into that a whole lot today. We covered that in other episodes. They're both beautiful models. Some people do just one, some people do both, but she's also tacked on other opportunities. She's getting into branded bundles, for example. We're going to spend some time describing what that is, talk about how that represents a nice chunk of her business. In 2024, we're anticipating that to be over 10% of her overall seven-figure business. So she's diversifying, she's building some beautiful income streams for her and her sisters. And I think you're really going to enjoy just going through this journey with Amy today. Now, I promised I was going to talk to you a little bit about our upcoming conference in May. Here's the only website you need. It's three words. Ready? The Proven Conference. It's May 23rd through 25th of 2024 in Orlando, Florida. It's the longest running Amazon seller conference in the world, our 12th annual event, 40 breakout sessions with great speakers and leaders from our community. Amy's going to have a breakout session. Our keynote speaker is someone I'm super excited about. Get over to the website, see the details. We'd love to have you there. And here's a really good part. I'll mention this at the end of the episode again today as well. But if you've never been to one of our events before, we've got some really good news. Because of the generosity of the sponsors, we've got so many sponsors who've stepped up in such a big way this year and helped cover the expenses of our beautiful venue. We can have people come at no charge. We've got a scholarship program we want to tell you about that gets you into the event at no charge at all. Especially if you're new around here, we want to show off this community. We want you to come see the success stories, the energy, the camaraderie, the abundance mindset. We'd love for you to be a part of all of it. Details on the scholarship program and the event in general are at the website, The Proven Conference. Three words, theprovenconference.com. Would love to see you there. Hope you can join us. Well, let's jump over and have a great update conversation with Amy. She's been on the show before. It was back in episode, I think, 397, if we got that right. We'll stick it in the show notes if that's the wrong link. But enjoy this update conversation with a great leader. And again, so many great tips, practical strategies, and just a really cool story. Enjoy this episode. So Amy, welcome back to Silent Sales Machine Radio. Good to see you.
Thank you, Jim. Great to see you too.
Well, you've become quite a leader in this community, and I know you well, as do many others, but there's probably going to be a few who don't know Amy Stover. So fill us in. You know, tell us a little bit about your history, and then let's jump into what's been going on lately.
Good plan. So 11 years ago, I got into selling online with 5 goods in my possession, no cash, no experience, and it went from there. I had utterly no clue what I was getting into that day. I listed my first thing up for sale. I don't think any of us do that first time we get into business. When I was on the show just over 2 years ago now, it would have been late in 2021. I had been selling for 8 years, 6 on Amazon and the full 8 on eBay. I had done my first $1 million in sales in wholesale from a corner of a bedroom I shared with 2 other sisters and 1 other business. And I was 6 months into adding replans into my home. At that point, I was working alone on a 6-foot folding table in a walkway. Whenever I had a shipment, I would set up the table, bring out my poly bags and tape and the goods. And then when I was done, I'd take everything back and stow it in my room. And it worked very well, having that one table to work off of. That's what enabled me to get into replans out of the house and start figuring that out and gaining experience over there. And it was doing quite well there. 6 months into replans, I just had my first $10,000 month just of replans in addition to all of my stuff. That was right after the first time I came to a conference. I had just become a coach. So I was figuring that out that fall of 21 as well. And then later on in the fall, I hired one of my sisters to join me. She's worked with me ever since. And we were on track for about $400,000 by that Christmas. And that was episode 397, if I recall correctly, if anyone wishes to look that one up.
There, I think 397 is the right episode. I'll look it up to make sure and stick it in the show notes.
Excellent. So the following spring, 1 year into my replans adventure, I had broken $28,000 in replans alone in a single calendar month. So that was really exciting to see how much this had grown while it was doing. And it was the fastest growing department in my company at that point in time. And we were still working in the hallway at that point. But later on in the summer, we had the opportunity to renovate and move into a 200 square foot room. And that's where we operate still to this day. That room took us from $28,000 a month in replans to where we ended late last year at just below $1.1
million. $1.1 million. Yeah, out of a 10 foot by 20 foot approximately.
About 12 by 15, yeah.
There you go. Yep. That's incredible. Yeah, what can be done with a little, basically a spare bedroom size. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep, it's a spare bedroom.
Yeah.
It's tight, but it's what we have. It is a huge improvement. We now have 20 feet of table instead of 6. We've dedicated space. I don't have to set up and break down every time I want to send a shipment.
Yeah, you don't have to take the table down and put all the supplies in the closet every day, right?
No.
Like back when you had to squeeze it into your bedroom. That's great.
Yeah, it's not where we will stay.
Sure.
But it's been a wonderful place to build, to grow. The business has tripled over the last 2 years. This was a great place to do that in. We cannot get much bigger here, but in time, hopefully this year, hopefully this spring, I'll find something. It isn't quite so crowded at every possible moment. And then we'll have the space freedom to grow further should we also come up with enough manpower to grow as well.
Yeah.
And even if we don't have more manpower, more space alone will increase speed. You know, there's that trade-off, the higher expense for more space or extra time it takes to handle things more times because you just don't have the space.
Yeah. Yeah. You can create a real project flow where stuff comes in, stays in one area, moves through the room, moves out, instead of kind of all piled on top of each other, as I kind of imagine. It might
That's kind of what it is now.
We could probably, I don't know if you'd be willing to do it or not, but you certainly don't have to. But if we threw a little picture in the show notes, like this is what it looks like, you know, 200 square foot of space running a seven-figure Amazon business. Don't clean it up. Just go snap a picture. No pressure, but we'll throw it in the show notes if you give us one today. Well, I think it'll encourage some folks.
Maybe when I have all the inventory out.
Yeah, well, sure. You can blur some of that. Blur some of that if you have to. We don't want to give all your best ASINs. But
that would be really bad.
yeah, could be with all the listeners. But okay, so yeah. Very proud of you. Let me just say, because just on a personal note, I may have said some of this in the introduction as well, which I'll be recording when we're done here today. But just how proud I am of you and your journey. And you're on the younger side of the bell curve for our community. You've built a beautiful business. You're employing some of your family. And you've kind of done it on your own. You figured it out. And I know part of the story from, if it's correct, episode 397 from a couple of years ago, was that you've never run another business and you never really had any other job.
I got into e-commerce when I was 15.
Yeah, as a 15.
This is all I've ever known.
Yeah, this is it. So you are you're a true warrior and you've built something pretty amazing and you're always inquisitive and asking questions and trying new things and doing what's suggested. And you've become a respected, trusted coach and leader in our community as well. And you'll be speaking at the conference. This episode should come out well before our May event. So excited to see what you've got to share for us there. You're always very, very precise and insightful with your observations about the industry and this business. So well done. I just wanted to put that out there where you could hear me as we're going through your story.
Thank you.
Of course.
Now, every time you add a new model to your business, as I have numerous times over the last few years, it takes time. Mm-hmm. Yes, we know the field. We know how to read Keepa. We have our base knowledge of how everything works. But every new sourcing model is very different from the others. Everyone takes time to figure out, to comprehend, to wrap your mind around. But beyond that, there's a minimum level of experience before it just clicks with your brain. And you can glance at a chart in your niche and be like, oh yeah, I know I normally test 6 of this type of thing, but that chart, I'm testing 24 and it will all sell within 3.5 weeks. And it does.
Yeah.
Because you just know it.
You get confident. Mm-hmm. You've seen the pattern. You start to recognize the pattern.
3.5 weeks. Oh, well, you still did pretty good on it. Mm-hmm. It's not something we would do early on, but with experience comes confidence. And with growth comes more capital. If you risk 0.5% on something you weren't 100% sure on, it doesn't break the bank if you lose it all. And chances are you're not going to lose it all. You're just going to lose a little bit. So partway through 2022, we were running a 50-mile radius and just totally stalled out. We found what we could find. We searched high and low. There had to be thousands more items available, but we just were not finding. And so I made a strategic choice. I will move our driving radius to 100 miles.
Mm-hmm.
That's 2 to 3 hours, depending on what the traffic's doing. It's a significant distance.
Yeah, so you're doing primarily retail arbitrage, buying off store shelves, and instead of only driving 50, you said, I'm going to go 100 now. 2 to 3 hours of drive time needed one way
to
your shopping destinations. Yeah, and this is a 2022 decision a couple of years ago.
Yes, it was. And that's a lot of time, a lot of fuel, a lot of wear on your vehicle. Mm-hmm. But I had some ideas, I had some plans and some advice. And I was able to find our spot in the retail arbitrage portion of the market. We still drive to 200 miles round trip every week to get those goods. And that expansion was what enabled the business to grow from, it was about 500,000 in 2022 to over 1 million. Just that doubling the driving radius and all the opportunity and change of stores that brought to us.
And so even with the added fuel and the added wear and tear on the car,
and the added time, people
are listening, the time commitment, right? And you're still doing this with your family, correct? It's a couple.
Yes, I am.
One or two sisters?
I can't. Two sisters right now.
Right. So the three of you are running this business, and is it their full-time jobs as well?
They're both part-time, and they both have other part-time things.
They have other income as well. Okay, so two part-time help family. And the 2023 was seven-figure plus, right?
It was. That was totally impossible without the assistance of my sisters. One person cannot run a seven-figure business, not in retail arbitrage. It's just way too much.
You tapped the limits of what's possible there.
Yes.
You're a great case study in what's possible if you're going to hop in your car and hit retail. Because you were still doing some wholesale, though, too. You had some good wholesale.
I do wholesale to this day.
Mm-hmm. And those have cooled off a little bit, I think, hadn't they, for you?
They've cooled off about 50% right now. Mm-hmm. It'll come back when the economy rebounds. And until then, we're only going to do about $200,000 a year in wholesale, and that's about it.
For those particular product lines.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was what was so nice about the retail arbitrage that I added in 2020, I think it was. No, it should have been 2021 when I got into replens. That in replens, you're looking for hundreds and hundreds of products.
Right.
If 15 of them cool off this week, 17 can't be found, 24 aren't worth buying because they aren't profitable, you still have several hundred left.
Yeah, yeah.
And when those rebound, you'll add them back in, and probably some of the ones you have been running suddenly you don't want to touch for 6 months. And
mm-hmm. That's the churn. It's the churn of the replen model. Yeah. Inch deep, mile wide, we call it, where you're selling just a few of a whole bunch of different items. Whatever happens to be hot at the moment, whatever happens to be findable and profitable, you know, that's where you put your time and resources. Right. That's the churn. But we've got a lot of people doing it at scale, including myself. We love it. We love that model.
Yes, a lot of work, but you figure it out and put your systems in place. And and for us, the business exploded. February just ended as the 16th month in a row to set a calendar record for that month.
Oh, congratulations. How'd you do? Yes, here we are in March of 2024. We just wrapped up February, like you said. If you don't mind sharing, what was your record month?
Our record month was last spring at 112,000. But I'm not sure if people gathered what I just said a moment ago. When I look at whether or not a month set a new record, I look at that month from every prior. And the last 16 months in a row, that calendar month, whichever one it was, be it February, be it November, was larger than the prior November.
Gotcha.
And all the Novembers that had come.
Understood. So you compare a November to a November. You compare February to all the past Februaries. That makes sense because there's seasonal elements, especially too. I know a lot of your wholesale. So that makes sense.
Yes, a lot of my wholesale seasonal, quite a bit of my replants are seasonal.
Right.
So I
look best at February ever.
Yes, it was.
That's great.
And last February was also a record-setting best February.
Exactly. Yeah. Well done. That's great.
That kind of growth cannot continue. I strongly suspect we're going to lose it here in March because it was last March that did 112,000. So this will be the hardest month to maintain.
You got to beat 112,000 to have the record-setting March. I got you. Okay.
Yeah. That's a lot of growth, a lot of change in momentum and what you have to do on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that you expect to have happen 16 months in a row. It's not even something I would suggest that you seek to have happen 16 months in a row. That's just how it worked out. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad it happened 10 years in so that I had a lot of foundation. I had some idea what I was getting into. I've been through multiple massive growth time periods before, never quite this long, but I've experienced a portion of it. You don't really want that right out of the gate. Let's go from 10,000 a month to 50,000 a month.
Yeah.
Every single month.
A lot of lessons you need to learn along the way. And I much prefer slow, steady, stable growth versus massive spikes, because big spikes come with big drops and painful lessons and big losses. So yeah, mitigating your risk as you grow is a big deal around here. It's something we teach, you know, protecting your capital. Don't start trusting your instincts just because you had a good month and, you know, try to outguess or outgame the system. You know, keep it basic. But yeah, well done. Well, we've thrown a lot of revenue numbers out. Let's make sure we hit a margin. And I know everyone always says, well, I mean, I wish I could get a little more margin than what I've got, but I mean, this is your full-time business. Yeah, everyone does. It doesn't matter where your margins are. And in this business, it ranges anything from, you know, the big, completely automated businesses where people are just checking their stats and they've got a huge team running it, you know, and they're happy with 5-6% net. That's great. And then up to, you know, 30%+, people who typically that's the smaller 10, 20,000 a month. And they're doing all the work themselves and they're being super cautious on their ASINs and they haven't made any big mistakes yet. And they're running a very slim operation. 30% net margin is doable. Yeah. 30%+. We've seen up to 40. But most people are somewhere in between. And I've heard your numbers, so I kind of know. I think I remember about where you're at, but we need to share that just for full transparency. So, yeah.
That we do. Everyone has a number that they target that says the ideal ASIN is whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This amount of ROI, this number of dollars profit, this margin, a combination of the three, whatever it is, this is the absolute ideal. And then they make their choice. How much below the absolute ideal am I willing to run today? Not because I would adore to run this set of numbers, but because it makes money. It will keep the lights on. It will pay the staff. It will cover the taxes and make sure there's money at the end. And then there's all the times that we test a new listing and it falls so flat and we hopefully don't lose too much money. And that brings our margin down. There's all the times that listings get deleted out from under us. And for whatever reason, we may or may not be able to recoup our money. That brings our margin down. And then we can't forget paying all the staff and our own paychecks. And that really brings the solution down.
Yeah.
That brings it down more than anything else. And taxes.
All the supplies, right? Any business is going to have, it's a long list of stuff that you've got to keep track of to know your real numbers, to know your true net margins.
Absolutely. So I haven't quite finished up taxes for 2023 yet. They're getting very close. But I'm expecting it to be right at 5% margin. After my paycheck, after the staff, but before the bulk of the taxes are paid.
So $1 million+ business, 5% net margin. And is that after you've paid yourself or before?
After.
After you've paid yourself, which, okay. So that's you're paying the bills, making a living. You're putting about $50,000 in the bank after everybody's paid and all taxes are paid, approximately.
Well, still have some more taxes to pay.
Sure, sure. But just
they
to give
always take a big chunk.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you. I gotcha. But still, profitable business, paying yourself, paying your workers, this is what you do.
This is all that I've ever done.
Yep.
Yep. You know, it's not the business that you or anyone else has. I certainly don't have the freedom that you have. But it's the business that I built, that I have learned with. The business that I have grown up with in many ways, not the business I will have forever, but the business I have today, margins I have been able to create. And with time, I would expect to be able to use my experience to improve both the margin and the freedom and the flexibility elements and turn it into the business that I wish it to be, which it is much more so now than it has been at any other time in the past.
Fantastic.
But it's always changing. It's always
great. Yeah. Well, it's just so much easier, Amy, to tweak a system that's already in process.
And already works.
Yeah, it's working.
Whether the tweak profitable. Works or not, we still pay all the
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So making little changes, maybe cut back some of the lower profit inventory you move out, which frees up some of your time. Some of the tasks that you're doing, you pay someone else, you know, some of that. You know, you basically ended up with, just to use a round figure, after everybody was paid, yourself included, somewhere around $50,000 or so, maybe slightly less. But you've got some capital there that's accumulating, and that can be used to do things.
I can afford to outsource.
Exactly.
Even though that outsource doesn't pay me back the day I do it. Mm-hmm. It might not pay me back in visible cash for a couple months, but I have the cash that I can do it, mm-hmm. knowing it will produce later on.
Yeah. And to scale, to free up your time. And I know it seems like you were talking about branded bundles as well. Isn't that something you were starting to experiment with?
Yes. Another very expensive long-term project.
Right.
So last year, we did about 15% wholesale, which was very low because, as you mentioned, it's not doing so great now, but still going strong. 78% retail arbitrage, 2.7% online arbitrage, and 3.7% branded.
With the bundles?
Yes.
There we go. Wow. Okay. You've really had it broke down there. So you're still the vast majority of what you do, interestingly enough, is getting in the car, getting stores, and you're not looking for sales. You're looking for your replens, correct? Now, since you're in stores, do you do much of the like closeout liquidation type of, do you snag those when you see them?
I really don't do clearance aisles at all.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the replens go on sale on occasion, and I have a whole bunch of online arbitrage things that I only ever buy when there's a good sale or a good promotion on points back or something.
Okay.
But there's also a bunch of online arbitrage stuff that's good, even if I can't knock the price down a little with a few of those extra.
So you take advantage of all the in-store points programs and all of that, right?
When they exist, yes, a lot of my stuff comes from places where they don't have that kind of stuff.
Right. Okay. Yeah, beautiful business. As many times as we've talked and I've heard you share your story, I don't know that I've ever heard that. Maybe I've forgotten if I did hear that, the pie chart of your business, where I knew you were mostly RA, but I didn't realize, you know, 80%.
Yeah,
up to 100 miles away. That is a business model. Yeah. What do you do in the car besides listen to your favorite podcast, obviously, which we all know is this one, right? How do you pass the time, you know, 2-3 hour drive at a time? And this is still you doing, you said you have two sisters doing this as well. Do you still do a significant amount of the driving?
I do. Right now I do about 50% of the driving and buying in store, and I do about 50% of the range.
Okay.
But I've outsourced the other 50%. The long distance driving, I always do with another person. So I'll have one of my sisters with me.
Oh,
so
cool. Okay.
We can talk about anything and everything all
That's
the way.
That's great. All right. So you guys do just a lot of sister talk, having fun with each other. And
yeah, we won't have that option forever, but we do today.
Oh, that's so cool. I didn't know that. Because instantly I'm thinking like, okay, audiobooks and podcasts, I'm not thinking having fun time with your sister. That's great. That's how guys think. You know, if it was my brother and I, we wouldn't be talking, we'd be listening to something and maybe we'd talk about what we're listening to, but I don't think we could talk for 3 hours.
Well, if you spend part of that time sleeping, whoever isn't driving,
yeah,
is when
right.
you're going 3 hours away.
Yeah.
We're getting up really, really early. So whoever isn't driving tries to sleep a little on the way up.
Mm-hmm.
And gain back a little of that sleep we lost.
Yeah, that makes total sense, tag teaming it, getting a little bit of the synergy. When you get to the store, you divide and conquer, fly through the list. You get a lot more than twice as much done, I would imagine. And it's more than twice as much done in half the time. It's synergy effect kicks in, and you're getting like three times as much done as if you'd gone
with
yourself,
two people.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. So not a bad tip there. I like that. Cool.
There are days that I mind this work, like getting up at 4:45 a.m., driving out 3 hours, spending all day packing the car brim full of goods, driving it 3 hours back, offloading one ton of goods and carrying it up 8 steps, packing it into this teeny tiny room until walkways are down to about 8 inches wide.
Now, is there a reason you haven't moved? I mean, I'm hitting you cold with this, but I'm thinking if the stuff you really, like if the money, like what are the economics? Have you done the math on that? Like moving closer to?
That's an interesting question, Jim. Here's the problem. I go 3 hours north and I go 3 hours west.
Go north and south. You're right in the middle of where you need to be. Okay.
I have access to the better part of 4 state capitals from where I am, right? I know of nowhere else where I would have easy access to 4 states.
Gotcha.
So okay. Yes, a significant percentage of it comes from the north, but it is beneficial to have access to the southwest sections as well.
Gotcha. Well, the other idea that comes to mind is something that I know Brian and Robin Joy Olson, I'm just brainstorming with you here today, but I can't help it. That's the way my brain works. And these are things you've probably thought of, but maybe this will help someone as well. Or maybe you haven't yet, but they had friends in those cities that would shop and prep and send stuff in on their behalf with the right stickers. So they trained them, right? Because if you do the math, there's a good chunk of change there that you could be paying, saving yourself some money, finding someone in those cities that you trust. And that can be a challenge, but I think it might be something worth conquering, right?
For a while I had my brother in Dallas doing that, and that gave me access to a fifth major city.
Mm-hmm.
And he was using my inventory lab account, shipping stuff in for me. He doesn't do it anymore. It wasn't really his thing.
Sure.
But he did for quite a while.
So you played with that model. Yeah. It's something
I have. Considering. It's something I want to do more with, but it's right up there with all the other super important things I really ought to do right away.
Which we all have that list. Yeah.
That is way too long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but just in helping other people kind of brainstorm through this model, I don't want to leave anyone thinking like, wow, the only way to do this is the way Amy does, get up at 4 a.m. and drive 3 hours. There's so many ways to do it. And even for you.
I would rather hire more people to take more of this work off my hands.
Yeah.
It's not especially difficult. It's not especially easy either. I learned a lot working with my brother doing it. I learned a lot trying to hire a lady locally who then ghosted me before she actually seriously got working.
Mm-hmm.
And next time I broach the subject, I'll have both of those experiences to draw on.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn what you absolutely must tell them, because I've done this for 11 years. I've done replans for almost 3. There are things I just know that I forget I haven't even told my sisters.
Right.
You have to have a comprehensive list. Here's what you need to know to be able to pull off this job. And here's what I expect of you, and make sure you comprehend what I expect of you so that we know whether or not you actually want a position in the company that I need you to fill, or right. If I need to look for someone else.
Yes. Yeah.
It will come.
That's why I call it a leadership journey, Amy. You know, I've got one of my sons who owns a landscaping business, and the most challenging part of his business has been that leading other people, especially he's on the younger side like you, right? And so he's hiring people who are 20, 30 years older than him, and he's managing them and having to communicate clearly the expectations and the job description and the requirements of you know, what goes into the day-to-day operation and managing those people. Yeah, that is the biggest challenge he faces because he's on the younger side. So I would suspect that's some of the resistance you probably feel is like, what's it like to have 5, 6 people in these different cities? And
let me tell all these people who are old enough to be my parents what I expect them to get done, or I will pay them.
Exactly. You know,
or are you old enough to be my grandparents?
Yeah, look at it through a different lens, and you know, it's a chance to be a real blessing to them, and it's a flexible job, and they like shopping anyway, and they just think you're the sweetest thing, and you know, she sends you cookies or whatever. You know, I'm just imagining this sweet grandma type, you know, whoever it is that would be doing this job. And it could be a beautiful arrangement if you have the right person. And that's, you know, that really is the make or break. Is it the right person, a right fit? Does it fit into their life well? And now, you know, you're not having to drive, and just something to think about. I'd love to think about, you know, we don't have to do it all right now on this podcast episode, obviously, today, but just think it through sometime and even help and qualify. You know, a book that would be good for you to read is, I recommend it from time to time. You may have heard me recommend it, is Dave Ramsey's book, Entree Leadership. Have you heard me talk about that one before? Entree Leadership?
In passing, I haven't read that one.
Well, the basic premise was how he went from a card table in his garage, his little spare bedroom, right, to a rather robust company, a large company that's got 600-700 employees now, which we're not aiming for that. But those first few people he hired, how he interacted with them, some of the how you measure the people and what roles you put them into, you know, just it really challenged me with some of the really common sense advice about making sure you're bringing the right people onto the team, basically. Might be a good read for you. One of those audiobooks for next to a long car trip, maybe. I think you pick up some good wisdom from it.
Yeah.
Well, where else do you want to go in your story? What else would you like to share? You know, I know you're all about bringing value to the community. You're a great coach on the team. You're a very popular speaker at our conferences. You've done that a few times, both virtually and in person. You've got your own little fan base, I think, in our community of people. It's like, oh, because you're so precise and you think out, you mean what you say, and you're careful with your words. You're very direct. So what else is on your mind? We've got some time remaining today to dive into Emmy lessons, big, small tips, whatever. Or if there's more of your story you'd like to share, you know how these things go. What's on your mind?
Well, for the next part of the story, I'd like to back up 7 years.
Let's do it.
7 years ago was right after I'd gotten into Amazon. I think it was right around the time I first heard you existed, Jim.
Okay.
And it was the first time I heard about private label. I'd been looking for what exists in this field that I have found myself in. And it's not surprising that when you start doing random Google searches, you start finding a lot of stuff about private label.
Yes.
That's going to be the most common thing that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, I had enough wisdom to realize that these were very expensive suggestions. And while I saw the value that they brought and the potential of what they could become, I knew I was in no position to engage in such a thing. So I figured when I reach my 30s, I'll probably come back, look at this more, and figure out what there is here. Fast forward 5 years, and I walked into my first Proven conference. The one model that I heard talked of over and over and over again was branded bundles, a concept that was very similar to private label, but much simpler. But even still, it takes a little while to figure out that this one's simpler than private label. It's lower risk. And so, I wasn't thinking I would do anything like this until I was in my 30s and I was still in my 20s. So I wasn't especially interested in this idea, but everyone was talking about it. So I start looking into it. I start talking with people and trying to figure out what is this. I can always add it into my knowledge base for things to check back to in a decade and see what else there is to learn. But while I was there, I received a gift from Nathan Bailey, the gift of an idea that I didn't have to wait another decade until I was in my 30s to make that first step to found a brand, to take a very low risk option to engage in where the field was going, as I had known for many, many years. There was a way to do it without risking my entire net worth and then some, without having to go overseas, and without it having to be the thing that you poured all of your time and energy and resources into. So by the time I left that conference, I knew that I would found a brand. I would do brand funds. I would do it with a trademark. I would do it with this community. The problem was that I didn't like his timing.
Mm.
As most course creators are, Nathan was very excited about this program that he was working with, that he had seen so many people have so much success with, that he suggested I get into it immediately. I, on the other hand, was 12 weeks into testing out this new thing called replans. I had chosen that as my focus for a minimum of 12 months, as I usually do when I take on a new project.
Right, very methodical.
And I had chosen my purpose and my expansion plan for the year. It was replans. It was going well. I had over 100 ASINs in testing.
Mm-hmm.
I needed time to grow that, to establish it, bolt it down, and to hopefully one day make it click in my brain, because I was worlds away from that at that moment. But when the time was right, I knew I would return. Because this way of entering the safe and low-risk side of private label was by far the best I had ever seen, and I would return for. So when the time was right, I returned to the place where I knew a whole lot of knowledge on branded bundles was. And I started the process with that first step. What name would I like to create to be mine for me to look at and work with and care for and nurture for the next 7 decades and make into I have no idea what.
Right. Your trademarked brand name, right?
Yes. I did not understand what I was getting into, but I knew that would come with time. I did not understand replens the day I got into that. Whereas now I'd say I have an excellent grasp of that.
You certainly do. Yes. Hey, pardon the interruption for just a moment, but I've got to tell you about one of the favorite sponsors that we've had around here for quite a while, simply because so many people are using their services now. They're very popular in our community. Seller Board loves us and we love them. What do? They help you know if your products are profitable. On an ASIN by ASIN level, you can dive into the details of which of your products are performing well and which ones need to be cut out, along with a host of other new really cool features that they're constantly adding and innovating. It's a very inexpensive tool that's very easy to set up. And we strongly encourage you to go take a look at the special offer they have just for listeners to this podcast at silentgym.com/numbers. Jump over there, check out what they've got for us. For just a few dollars, you could get rolling and know your numbers later today. Hey, let's get back to today's episode.
I did not understand what I was getting into, but I knew that would come with time. I did not understand replens the day I got into that. Whereas now I'd say I have an excellent grasp of that.
You certainly do. Yes.
And so I gave it some thought for a while, came up with a couple of names. And then the day I sent Nathan one and he thought that one was pretty good, I quit looking for names because I thought that one was pretty good too. And so the next day we got the process started. And he sent me over to Michael Gray to do the branding side and get this new venture established as a professional brand. So working with Michael was a journey of discovery. I didn't know what was needed or what should be, but as with many journeys, it becomes as you go along. When I first met up with Michael, I had a brand name chosen, how it was spelled, how it was pronounced, and I knew that she was female. And that's all that I had for sure. Later on, I developed very strong opinions about color and font. I had a font I was 100% sure I wanted. And at the end of the day, it wasn't the right one for this project. I picked a different one in the final lineup.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, Michael's so good at that. And I know, like, for me, I had no strong opinions when we developed our brand and like, yeah, whatever you guys think. I just had to, I'm kind of that way. My wife is so artistic and so into colors and fonts and layouts. And like, I've never had to be the guy that made those decisions. So I don't even give it. There's not even a part of my brain that even considers or worries about those sorts of things. Right. So that's what I love about that creative process is you can have the input and you're going to be bouncing off of somebody. You mentioned Michael, you know, with Humminbird, basically. We'll stick a link in the show notes today. But he's done some of just the incredible trademark brand work and the brand research that goes into it and the colors, the fonts, et cetera. Yeah, he's a brilliant guy.
I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know what I was looking for. I didn't know what I was making. I barely comprehended the teeniest inkling of what a brand was. And when it came down to all these specifics that he wanted me to come up with, I was like you. I really didn't know there at the start. So I drew the bounds of what I did not want him to include. And so I told him, not this type of font. Exclude those colors. Because I can't make a subjective statement to an artist and say, use pretty colors because I don't want it to be ugly. What if he thinks pretty colors are what I think are ugly colors? It just doesn't work. So I drew found that that said, exclude those colors, use something in these ranges. And then I looked at those ranges before I sent them to him and said, these go together, but this one over here, it's a great color, but it so does not fit. Get rid of that one. Sent him the ranges of the remains. And he chose something from that set of ranges and created the logo that I run with now. You know, you are not your customer. You don't have to like the logo you run. It's helpful if you don't strongly dislike it, but you don't have to like it. Your brand is not marketing to you. You already own all this stuff that you're trying to sell.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. Personal preference of the owner is almost irrelevant, but it like you said, it helps if you don't hate it.
It does. And in the end, I got a logo that I absolutely love. But that was not necessary. Mm-hmm. If he had told me, do not do that one, do this one, I would have. Because I trust he knows a lot more about brands than I do. Because I know, like, nothing. Yeah, I knew Michael was good before I worked with him. But I had absolutely no clue how absolutely wonderfully skilled he was until...
Yeah, he's quite an asset for the community. He's helped, I would say at this point, hundreds of logo brand build outs. I think they call it a brand build out, where they talk about the color palette and the theme and the font and, you know, what you're trying to represent and communicate.
Well, style guide.
Style guide, that's it. Yeah. And the, you know, just the making sure that you're trademarking a word that can be trademarked. That's a lot of the work that goes into it as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Make sure that the trademark office is likely to accept it.
Yes.
Doesn't mean that they will.
Yeah.
They're likely to, and you aren't going to run into major trouble competing with someone else who's also using this word.
Yes, exactly. So at this point, you've used that and you've built some branded bundles. You mentioned earlier when you shared your pie chart, I think you said it was about 3%, I think you said, of your business overall.
Which 3.7% last year.
Yeah. So about 4% of your $1 million business, 40 grand, you know, or so of sales. Yeah. Just under. But it's something that you're hoping to build on. How many different ASINs are you listed against with your brand?
My brand, I've gone through launch with 7 so far.
You've launched 7 ASINs with your brand, and it sounds like one or two of them are the ones that are carrying the bulk of the...
Yes, 3 of them, actually.
Okay, which doesn't surprise me. 80-20 rule, Pareto principle and all, right? That's about right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the first 3 listings that I built, Nathan helped with the first one, and then I built the other 2 off of that template. Those 3 have done better than all of the others. 4 and 5 didn't really take off until last Christmas. 6 and 7 were very seasonal. I think they're well positioned for next year, and that was the greatest hope I had for them this year. And I've got the better part of a dozen in the works over here right now. I just haven't quite gotten them to launch yet. Sure. I'll probably be launching one later this week.
Okay, cool. So you
are of those, of those very first 3 branded bundle listings.
Right.
Since September, all 3 have always placed in my top 8 ASINs by revenue, and they usually place in my top 4 every single month.
Wow. So these are top 10, 3 of the 7 you've launched are top 10 performers for you.
Across my entire catalog.
Compared to your replans and your other wholesale ASINs. That's a great part of the story. Okay, and I'm assuming the margins are better. Typically, they are with branded bundles.
Yes, margins are much better on those.
What are your margins on those 3, approximate?
Let's see. I make about $5 to $6 on them, and it sells for $31 to $35-ish. So, right around 1.7.
Yeah, so 15%-ish, somewhere in there. 20 maybe, but certainly higher than the 5% of your overall business.
For sure.
Yeah. So some of the top performers margin wise as well. And the nice thing about branded bundles for people who don't know, I know you know this, Amy, but is no one else can compete with it. It's your brand, your trademark. You've brought a value add item to other commonly easily sourced products that anyone could sell, but you've brought your branded item to those products, created a bundle under your trademark. And now you've got an ASIN that technically you're the only person that's allowed to sell against it because you're the only one that can source the unique item that's included.
Right? Yes. And people can counterfeit you and until my trademark finalizes.
Mm-hmm. But you've got
to have such trouble. Mm-hmm. I would not be able to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But in time, my trademark will finalize. And then if any such trouble crops up down the road, it hasn't yet. But if it were to, I would be in a position to defend, do something about there. Yeah. Defend the work that I've made. And
mm-hmm.
Keep it just mine.
Ah, that's fantastic. I love it. What a great story of figuring it out, sticking with it over the long term. This is the first and only job you've ever had. You've built a beautiful business. You're getting into branded bundles. Great coach on our team. I love it. But where are we going next? What else? I mean, I don't want to cut you off on the branded bundles. That's a great story, but
that is.
Yeah.
So I said it was about 3.7% of $1 million of revenue.
Right.
But that's comparing the portion of sales to the entire year of sales for the company as a whole.
And you didn't launch
that. Nathan and I launched that first bundle in June.
Yeah, so they only had half a year to perform.
Yes, and as a side note, this business takes a lot to get going, the branding stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I start going for a trademark in October, and life happens, stuff comes up. I am running an explosively growing company here. There's a lot of stuff that has to be done. But as a side project, this took about 8 months, 9 months to have a first listing.
Yeah.
Available, active, fully built out, all the A-plus content, all the images.
Right.
And be ready to launch that first one right before the
Which is why we don't encourage new sellers to go down this road. It takes so long.
And it's not just time and how much time and hours you have to spend studying it and learning it and working with it. It's also money.
Yeah.
You have to pay for the trademark.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pay for the branding. You have to pay for your UPC codes. You have to pay for whatever packaging you're putting around whatever unique item you have invented, which you must invent and pay for and have readily available, whether you white label something from someone else or have it made special. You've got to shell out the cash to get it bought and sent to you and packaged up. None of these are a ton of money. It's multiple thousands across all of them, but you have to have a chunk of money in reserve that you can lay out thousands of dollars for multiple projects before it culminates in that moment where you can list the first one and sale.
Maybe.
And then once it's up for sale, does it do well? Does it not?
Yeah.
My first three did incredibly well. First one launched in June, and by August, it was in my top 10 sellers.
Yeah.
Now, it was seasonal, and it was coming into season there in the late summer and fall. And that would have played in quite a bit, but listings take a while.
Mm-hmm.
All of my listings since then have taken longer. And I have heard that that is common. Some listings nowadays, they just sit there for 3 months and suddenly they start getting a little bit of traction.
Right. Right. There's a bit of a randomness to it.
To agree, yeah. How well did you guess what the market actually wanted? How well did you target them with the listing you created? How many of them were actually looking for it? And did they actually find it when they went looking for it? And if they did, were they willing to buy something from a brand they did not recognize? It takes some time to get that establishment, to get the first couple of reviews, to give that listing a fighting chance in this world of competitors that we've thrown it out into.
Right. Well, I was just occurring to me that, you know, you said you did just under 4% having started in the middle of the year. So all things kind of remaining consistent in 2024, we'd expect that the bundles, even if you don't add any more to them, if they continue to perform the way they are, would be about 10% approximately of your business. A little momentum picked up, selling at the same pace they are, you know, $100,000 in branded bundles at the nice margins you mentioned, right?
Entirely possible.
Mm-hmm.
But The bundles were 11% of December sales.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're, yeah, those are the numbers.
It has dropped since then. These are seasonal products for late summer and fall.
Mm-hmm.
But I have been surprised at how much they've sold across the winter. I wasn't expecting that. So it was more like 9% in January. So I would expect it to continue dropping for a little while. Then at some point when it gets warm, it will pick up again. But I was not at all expecting this particular product to sell across the winter, even though I've carried it before. Sell it wholesale against the brand's listings. It just doesn't do well in winter until this year. So there's some unusual things, even with the stuff that you think you know, doesn't mean you actually do.
Yeah.
Or like that summer line I ran for years that gave me $250,000 of sales in the summer, very little the rest of the year. And then suddenly the economy falls and people are like, I'm not spending that kind of money on a USA made, non-imported good. I'm going to go with this cheap one. That's all $15 cheaper.
Right.
Like, okay, it'll come back. Those who want the USA ones that live longer and treat you better, someday they'll be willing to pay that $15 extra and they'll come back. And until then, we aren't going to order very much.
Yeah, ASINs kind of come and go. That's why you diversify your risk. And even with your own branded bundles, you know, they'll come and they'll go. The game's always changing. But the nice thing is you can introduce as many as you'd like based on, you know, the factors that we've mentioned. You need some time. You're going to have to establish a trademark. Once you get your trademark and your brand, though, you can drop that on any product, right? And it's just a matter of
getting set up. Any niche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can carry the same brand across multiple categories on Amazon even. Now, we've seen people do that. You can set up separate ones if you'd like, but a lot of those are just one-time expenses that go into it. We're talking a lot about branded bundles. It occurred to me we haven't mentioned the course, the provenbrandedbundles.com course. It will be a module inside the Proven Amazon course, probably within a short time of this episode going live. We've talked about around the time of the Proven conference, which is in May. That's about when we're going to add it in, because the Proven Amazon course is a library of all the content, but sometimes we delay them a few months before we drop them in when we launch them. That course is, as we're recording this, sold separately, but will be a module very soon inside the Proven Amazon course for those who want to get going and then maybe start studying that as a model.
A model to add on to whatever base you have already built.
Yeah, you need that replan space.
A lot of time,
mm-hmm.
a lot of money, a lot of resources.
Yeah.
This is the wave of the future. I fully believe that. At least for a period of time, maybe not forever.
Mm-hmm.
But for the future I see right now, this is where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we need to be.
Yeah. Having your own brand is an eventual necessity from my vantage point. You don't have to have it the first month, first year, first 2 years. Eventually, it's something you're going to want to have.
Yeah, it's something you must add in if you intend to stay in the field long term.
Mm-hmm. And continue to scale, build systems, and build reliability. And when it's just you and you're like, maybe I'll do this, maybe I won't, you know, you take a little extra risks. But once you've got a team and now you've got some momentum and this is how you pay the bills and you've got your future forecasts, you want to start shoring things up a little bit. The visual image we use quite frequently is like, you know, you've built your castle. Now let's build a moat around that castle. Now let's fill that moat with alligators. Now let's build a wall around the moat, right? Like, so you just kind of keep going out, like adding security to this thing that you've built and helping it become more self-sustaining. That's the game. But when you're first getting going, it's like, wow, I just turned $5 into $40. This is a fun weekend hobby, right? You don't stay there forever. You've got to grow out of necessity. And growth means
you don't want to do it too early.
No.
That would be way too much risk, way too much expense.
I typically,
when the time is right.
Yeah. If a student hasn't had a $10,000 sales month yet, they shouldn't even be thinking about these things, in my opinion. And once you hit $30,000 a month, you probably should have been thinking about it at some point between $10,000 and $30,000 a month. At least start thinking about it, start studying it, start considering it, which forces you to start building systems to automate what you've already got going.
To free up a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm, free up some time.
Be able to take on such a huge process with so much new jargon, things that have to be done.
Exactly.
Just understanding Amazon is like a whole course program. But then understanding branding, that's a whole nother one that you have to have your foundation for first.
Yeah, there's always more.
You don't want to take those on at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yep, slow and steady, always more to learn. Anything in life worth having is going to kind of be that way, though. I'm learning this as I age. Is anything worth having in life is risk and sacrifice and time required and slow and steady effort and discipline and leadership and relationships.
Everything takes a lot of time.
It's all the same rules, right?
This is a leadership journey we're on.
Exactly.
And the longer I'm on it, the more I realize that this isn't about us or even at times our customers. This is about the growing process.
Mm-hmm. Your business is a reflection of your leadership skills. It really is. Ultimately, it kind of reminds me, Emmy, of the saying. I think Abraham Lincoln said this at one point. None of us are responsible for how we look when we're young, but the way we look when we're old, it reflects the decisions you've made over the course of your life. You are responsible for that, right? When you first come into this, you're like, hey, we're teaching you something, and whether it works or not, it's kind of on us, it's kind of on you. But over time, you've taken this on. It's not a reflection of you and your decisions and your leadership skills and how seriously you've taken it and what sacrifices you have or haven't made. And the business kind of looks like you now. This is a reflection of the effort, time, and energy you put in. And you can blame others, or you can blame the economy, and you can blame, you're the one that made the decisions to get you to the point you're at. And one of the things I love about our podcast is when people use the excuse of like, oh, I don't know if this even works. Well, we've got hundreds of people who are doing really well with it right now. So I don't think it's Amazon. They're doing it, right? Maybe it's the person in the mirror that needs to be have a little more examination, of the approach and the strategies. And we've all got our weaknesses and our flaws and our strengths. And it's just so beautiful. I think Robin Joy makes the observation all the time, Amy, that she's yet to encounter any two businesses that look alike in our community. Everyone's got a little different geographical or educational background advantage or relational advantage or a little connection. Yeah, my uncle's the guy that knows the guy who does what, and I tapped into that. Everyone's got their little angle. And that's the beauty of it, that we can all learn and kind of do it our own different ways while tapping into this huge paradigm shift in the way people shop that's still in its infancy is what blows me away. The game has barely started at this point. So when people talk about saturation, I'm like, what are you talking about? E-commerce is like 17% of the economy. That's it, of retail. It's going to be 30 in our lifetime. It's not even started yet. Yeah.
Huge. And we have the freedom to join it, to be a part of what it will become.
Shape it.
And to make our business what we need it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And if that changes in the future, all we have to do is change our business to adapt to what we need.
Yep.
While we are adapting to what customers want and what the marketplace demands.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else.
Being willing to learn and adapt is an underrated skill. I've never been challenged by it, so I underestimate the difficulty. It's in my personality type to be like, yeah, things need to change, let's change them. I need to learn something, let's learn it. The first time I was exposed to the fact that some people don't think that way was my first real job out of college. And I had people who'd been doing the same thing for 40 years. I'm meeting these people. I'm like, there's such an easier way to be doing what you're doing. And I'm like, oh, no, I don't want an easier way. I don't want a more efficient way. This is what I do. And if I start doing my job in 2 hours a day instead of 8 hours a day, then they're going to make me do other stuff. And I don't want that. I was like, I didn't know people like you existed. I don't know what to do with what you, that does not compute in my head. Like, we're here to try to make the company successful. And if the company makes more money, then we get pay raises. And I was just coming in green and thinking big. And Like, I got to get my own business. I think that's when I first decided to become an entrepreneur. Was when I heard that conversation. Like, I came in and I was like this, you know, spreadsheet wizard guy in the early 90s. And this lady was just doing this most tediously imaginable, painful data entry. She was using a spreadsheet like it was a handheld calculator with 9 buttons on it, you know. Like, I was just like, oh my gosh, I could change your life in about 3 hours. She's like, no. I don't want to be faster or more efficient because I don't know what I'd do with the rest of my day. I think that was the point where I said, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. If companies out there make money with people like this working, I know I could do better than that.
Yeah. And who I was when I was 18 was largely dependent on what my parents wanted. But who I am now, that I have a decade of experience in the business world, that has shaped me. That has changed me.
Yeah. As a leader, as a coach, as a human being, you know. Yeah. Are there any, we're running out of time here. We need to wrap this up soon, but are there any stories that come to mind from your experiences teaching, coaching, leading in this community? You can talk about how this business has shaped you. Anything stand out as a highlight moment or anything that pops in your head along those lines? Because you've been doing it with us for a while now, and we saw leadership potential in you well before you saw it in yourself, I think. I'm kind of proud of Nathan.
That is true.
Nathan said, I think we're onto something with Amy. Yeah. And he said, we got to get her into leadership. And
That's true. He saw that long before I did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's got that gift. But yeah, anything pop into mind as I said that? No pressure, just curious.
I think that comes forefront to mind was years before you and I met. I was in a different group. It was a large force. It had a lot of elements and moving parts. It was very good for what it was at that time. I thought I was very new to it. I thought that I was still learning ginormous amounts of stuff. And along comes this person who asks this question, and I know the answers. I give them the answer. And that was really a turning point for me. I hadn't been in this particular way of dealing with Amazon for very long. And I hadn't been in Amazon for all that many years at that time. But in that moment, I knew something more than someone who had just started. Mm-hmm. I don't know when, probably only a few months before. And I could give them that leg up and tell them, this is exactly how it works. And know that as long as they believed me and worked with it and tried it, they would see the results of that one little tiny snippet like I had. It was a very cut and dry thing. It wasn't one of those highly subjective details. And that was the moment that I realized that while I felt like I knew almost nothing, I could help someone else.
Mm-hmm. And there's a worldview that's exposed in what you just said, the abundance versus scarcity mindset that you had by default. And it's very difficult to go from a scarcity mindset to an abundance mindset. You already had it. Do you know what I mean by that when I say it? How I recognize that from what you just said? I could clarify pretty easily.
That I was willing to share as much as I had.
Right. Like with a potential competitor, like it'd be very easy to justify the position of saying, why in the world would I ever educate anyone who's anywhere near a similar space to me in business?
Like, and yet from that day, I've done it ever since.
Yeah. And that's what our leadership team consists of, people who see that abundance mindset, meaning you see this as something where we're not competitors. We are just minnows in the biggest imaginable ocean saying, hey, okay, this is what works. This is what doesn't work. The sharks are over there. Let's go this way, right? It's like we're kind of traveling as a school where we all kind of benefit, but there's just so much blue water out there. If you choose to have that abundance mindset. But a lot of people have the scarcity and they tend to go it alone and they kind of only show up to complain and then they go off on their own again and they're not educating or helping anyone along, which only means their skills aren't as sharp as they should be. Because I know you've learned this, Amy, when you have to present and teach something, the person who benefits the most is the teacher because they've had to really pore over what it is there. And they remind themselves of the basic foundational elements of the, like, you know what? I'm about to teach Keepa. and teach what this button does. I haven't used it in a while. I should probably use it. Like, oh man, I should have been using this all along, right? It's like you discover things through teaching that you never would have.
Oh, for sure.
And leading,
you have to know it to a whole different level.
Right. You hold yourself to a new standard of compatibility, which means you're learning and you're now an authority, not just to others, but internally, that authority and that confidence that comes. So the benefit of sharing isn't just, oh, you're such a kind person, although that's great. It's, I know the material better than anybody now. I can really apply this to my own business. It's so many intangible benefits that come with teaching and sharing and that abundance mindset. Again, I'm just so proud of that in our community. And you personify that beautifully, just by default. Your instinct was, yeah, I know the answer. I'm going to help this person. I'll never meet them. They'll never pay me, but why wouldn't I? And that gave you a boost. You didn't have any internal conflict over that. That to me is a leadership quality. It's hard to teach. Some people you can't drag them to think that way. They refuse.
That seems so odd. It's just how life works.
It seemed odd to me too. I think it comes from a scarcity mindset though. I really do. I think that's...
And then you're teaching other people and they say something. And it's like, huh. My business is easily 10 times the size of yours. Mm-hmm. But I never knew that.
Yeah.
But now that I do, I'm going to change.
Exactly.
Following more things, which will then.
Some of the most profound lessons come from the new coaching clients that come in and ask obvious, what they think are just obvious, simple questions or even silly questions. Or like, I've never actually considered that. Or they'll find a new feature because they're willing to play around on a tool that we think we know. And they're willing to play with it.
We use it in a certain way. And then right. They're like, but I clicked this and I want your opinion on that. I'm like, oh, what page are we on?
I didn't even know that it did that. That's great.
Okay.
So many benefits both ways. Yeah. That by design.
Really are.
Businesses designed to be shared relationally with people behind you and people ahead of you. It's just, it goes so much better that way. And again, you're doing a great job of representing that aspect of what we do here. But well, looking forward to seeing you in Orlando. Just as once this episode comes out, just a few weeks away, we're going to be there and at the conference, and you're going to be one of the presenters, 40 breakout sessions. Do you know what you're going to be speaking on yet? Do you have some topics in mind? I think we discussed it, but I don't remember what you'd sent me yet.
I've got a few preliminary ideas, but I haven't had that moment of inspiration that brings it all together and gives me the core.
Gotcha.
I'm sure it'll come. It's start.
Yeah. Well, we'll know. It'll be on there. The schedule will be released a couple weeks before the event. We'll know something, here in the next few weeks soon. And I've got to start working on that, actually, to be honest with you. I haven't pinned down the speakers as much as I should have at this point. But they're all just such great leaders of integrity who have built beautiful businesses. If they just showed up and shared their story, it's going to be an incredible event. But we've got a lot of Walmart on the schedule this year. Of course, all the Amazon content, the influencer program stuff is starting to really catch fire. A lot of the branded bundle stuff is going to be a point of emphasis, like you and I talked about today. It's going to be a really good, really good event. Hundreds of people registered.
It's the one event that I never miss.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, me too. 12 in a row. I've done 12 in a row now.
12 in a row, Jim. I'm only coming up on my
that? Fourth. Perfect attendance. Yeah, there's a good handful of people that have been to all of them. Pretty incredible. Well, Amy, it's great hanging out with you today. I do have to run and wrap this episode up, but just super proud of you. Honored to work with you. And I consider you a friend and someone who inspires me. And I'm just grateful that God brought you into our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. It was God who brought me. I did not intend to end up here doing what I'm doing with the people I'm doing it with. But there's no place I'd rather be.
Love to hear that. Love to hear it. And the future is bright. Well, thanks, Amy. Thanks again. Well, let me just talk to the listeners who joined us today, okay, for just a moment as we wrap this one up. And hopefully you had some great pointers today. You jotted down some good notes. I'm really hoping this encouraged and inspired you as much as it did Amy and I to get to hang out a little bit. If you're interested in hearing a bunch of episodes like this, maybe this is the first one you've ever heard, where we talk to the students of the Proven Amazon course. These are the people who have gone through our training or our coaching, started off as clueless newbies, and now they've built something. Those are the people we love talking to. We have hundreds of those episodes. We're about to approach 6 million downloads on iTunes with this podcast, which blows me away. So if you're watching on YouTube, you should know that a lot of our episodes are audio only, meaning you're missing out on a lot of our episodes if you're not subscribed over on, say, iTunes. We'd love to have you over there. And like Amy and I talked about, I think I'll end with this announcement. If you're able to come to Orlando, Florida, May 23rd through 25th of 2024, you really should be there. We've got a great scholarship program, if you weren't aware as well, especially if you're new to this community. We'd love to show off what we've built around here. No charge. Come to the event, hang out, meet the great leaders from this community, see some of the success stories. That's the people we have on stage in our 40 breakout sessions at this great event. Details are at theprovenconference.com. If you want to inquire about our scholarship program, there's a button right there for you to click on. You can inquire about attending at no charge. Again, especially if you're new to our community or never been to an event before, we'd sure love to have you there. Well, I think that's it. Amy, great job, my friend.
Thank you, Jim. Thank Good you. Catching up with you again.
We'll see you in a few weeks in Florida.
Yes.
Right?
In Florida.
And to all the business building warriors listening today, God bless you. We are in your corner. We're here for you. Jump into our free Facebook group. There's a link at silentgym.com. We'd love to help you out on your journey towards e-commerce success as well. So we'll have another great episode for you again very soon. Talk to you then. Before I let you go, one last reminder to our incredible sponsor, Sellerboard, thank you. And to our listeners, go check out the special offer they have for us. Hundreds of us use that tool to track our listings on Amazon and know which ones are profitable, which ones aren't, and a whole bunch of other really cool features. You can learn all about this inexpensive, easy to set up tool at silentgym.com/numbers. Go check them out. Tell them we sent you. We'll have another great episode for you very soon.
Thank you for listening to Silent Sales Machine Radio. Visit silentgym.com for a link to our free newsletter, our free Facebook group, and all of our resources mentioned on today's show.